Okay, looks like everything's going well. Good morning, Shabbat Shalom, and welcome to United Israel World Union. This is our Sabbath morning scripture study. I'm pleased to be here with you today, and I'm very appreciative that you are spending your time with me as well. Hope that you and yours are safe and healthy during this present situation that we find ourselves in. And look, you may as well help share some of these videos because a lot of people are in their homes right now, and they're looking for good quality material to watch, and especially when it comes to biblical studies. So hopefully these are beneficial for you, and you can share them with your friends and loved ones who also enjoy scripture study. I'm excited a couple of reasons today. Number one, we are presently, as of this morning, as of right now, United Israel World Union is in its 77th year. So yesterday, April the 17th, marked our 76th anniversary as an organization, founded in April 17th, 1944. And so today, we begin our 77th year, and it is exciting to know that we are continuing in the same charter, in the same direction that our organizational founder, David Horowitz, put forward. Now, listen to this. United Israel World Union was described in the documents that came back from the government whenever David applied for his status as a nonprofit. It says, they wrote him back and they said, we understand that United Israel will function as a union of all who endeavor in all sincerity to live according to the laws of Jehovah and to engage in educational work in the furtherances of your purpose. And that's what we intend to do. We intend to create an environment, if you will, a union for all who will, with all sincerity, seek to follow the ways of God. So that's pretty broad. In other words, we're not so concerned with checking off a list and saying you must believe this, 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 and this, but more of a general direction. If you love Jehovah, if you love the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and you seek to live according to his ways, then you're a welcome participant. So welcome again as we enter our 77th year. Thanks to everyone who, irrespective of color, race, creed, is joining with us on Shabbat. Shabbat Shalom. Now, I want to ask you, how many of you are glad to be eating leavened products again? I think it's funny when I watch my friends, my Torah-oriented friends on Facebook and on social media and so forth, whenever this 7 days of unleavened bread is over, people begin to talk about what it is that they're going to eat after 7 days of eating no leaven. So we've all just completed this 7 days Chag HaMatzot, the 7 days of unleavened bread, and people are posting pictures of nice pizzas and various other baked items with leaven in it. So happy eating, but don't overdo it. We have to stay fit. We have to stay in shape. And so I encourage you to eat healthily, and that's what I'm going to talk to you today about. I do want to say that some of you are much more creative with the matzah than I am, because I thankfully had some matzah given to me by John and Lyndon, and that's basically what I did. I just ate matzah. I didn't eat leavened products, and I ate leavened bread and or unleavened bread, and so some of you got pretty creative. I saw some nice dishes, and it was really nice to see, but I didn't get that kind of fancy cooking. So today we are going to be talking about diet, because the annual cycle of Torah readings puts us in a place where this becomes the focus. Now, this particular diet that runs throughout the Bible has all sorts of things associated with it, and the days of unleavened bread are a pretty peculiar diet-related custom. But it's rooted in ancient Israel's text, in these ancient texts of the Bible that belongs to Israel that Israel is to teach to the entire world. Texts that have much to say about what goes in to a person. And it has a lot to say about what humans should and should not eat. And I think that it's a very important subject, especially given the context of the time. Now, several weeks ago, Jono and I did a class when things were just beginning to get crazy with COVID-19. And we talked about how the ancient scriptures of Israel could be looked at as very beneficial in times such as these. We talked about the ritual purity laws and the hygiene that is described in the Bible and how people should wash their hands. And we brought in various things. And we ended that class several weeks ago from the desert, from the wilderness of Zin. We ended that class with a quote from Isaiah 65. And we talked about this idea that in Isaiah 65, which I'll get to later in my class today, talks about a bowl with the broth of abominable things. Now, I understand that according to various media sources, it depends on which source you watch and what day you watch it, there are various theories as to how this current pandemic began. One is that it was in a lab, and whether intentional or unintentional, it got out of that lab. The other is that it began, it has its zero point, if you will, in a wet market in Wuhan, China. Now, whichever side you go on, and I don't want people fighting about it online because there's enough of that junk. This is Shabbat. Relax. I don't care. Either way, both of these theories seem to suggest that it goes back to at least whether manufactured in a lab or from selling something unclean in a market, it goes back to a forbidden animal, whether it's just a bat or a bat and mixed with something else. But either way, it falls into that list of forbidden things. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But what I really want to convey today is that our Creator, the Creator of humanity, knows, ought to know, what it is that should fuel our bodies in terms of food. That the designer knows what is best and what is not appropriate to put in our bodies. And so I want to talk a little bit about that. And I want to suggest to you that the Bible does contain clear instructions on this. So I want to begin this morning at the beginning. If you would go with me this morning to the book of Genesis, Genesis chapter 1, and I want to begin in verse 26, Genesis 1, 26. And God said, "Let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth." And God created man in his own image, in the image of God he created him. Male and female he created them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, "Be fruitful and multiply, and replenish the earth and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea and over the birds of the heavens and over every living thing that moves upon the earth." And God said, "Behold, I have given you every herb yielding seed, which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree in which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed to you, it shall be for food, and to every beast of the earth, and to every bird of the heavens, and to everything that creeps upon the earth, wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for food." And it was so. Now, this is the design. This is the beginning of the beginning, the start of the story. In the Garden of Eden, when God creates Adam, he determines that very immediately he must assign something for nourishment for the man that he's created. Notice that in this particular passage, the first thing is that God blesses Adam, but then immediately following Adam's blessing, he says, "This is what I've given you for food." Now, this is not a commandment. I want you to notice this. It's not a commandment. We have a blessing and we have a statement by God. But at this point, the word command is not given, but it is assigning mankind a diet. So at the present, in the earliest chapter, in the first chapter of the Bible, when God creates Adam, he assigns this diet and he says that the diet for you is the same as the diet for all the beasts of the field, every green herb, seed, yielding seed, and so forth. Now I want you to go with me to chapter 2 and verse 15, Genesis 2 and verse 15. And Jehovah God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to dress it and to keep it. And Jehovah God commanded the man, saying, "Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it, for in the day that you eat thereof you shall surely die." Now this is the first mention of a commandment in Scripture. Earlier, there was a diet that was assigned to man and beast, but the first commandment mentioned in Scripture is in this particular passage. In this particular passage, it very clearly says, "And Jehovah God commanded the man and said unto him, Of every tree of the garden you may freely eat, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat of it." So what we have here is the first commandment given to humanity is a dietary rule. Now, this is very important, especially in today's topic, that the very first command is a dietary rule, and it has a prohibition. And the prohibition is to not eat of a specific tree. All other trees are welcome and open for consuming, but this one particular tree is not. And what we're told is that violation of God's command will certainly bring death. So this is very important, because what we see is that if we understand the chapters, the early chapters of the Bible, what we see is that over time, you'll see this play out all the way through, that principles that we learn in the opening chapters stay true throughout. So we establish certain things, that a commandment by God, the prohibitions that are a violation of those commandments can bring a sentence including death. So that's what the Hebrew says, dying, you shall surely die. Now, I want you to look down at chapter 3, Genesis chapter 3, and I want to pick up in verse 1. "Now the serpent was more subtle than any beast of the field which Jehovah God had made. And he said to the woman, Hath God said, You shall not eat of any tree of the garden? And the woman said unto the serpent, Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, You shall not eat of it, neither shall you touch it, lest you die. And the serpent said unto the woman, You shall surely not die, for God does know that in the day that you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be open, and you shall be as God, knowing good and bad. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and there was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat. She also gave to her husband with her, and he did eat." Now, the story begins, this particular story in the book of Genesis in the garden, the story begins with the Nakash simply asking a question. Now, when he asked the question, he simply asked it, and the answer could have been anything. But what she does, what the woman does is she answers the question, And notice how she answers it. We're going to pay close attention to this, because when he asked her, "Has God said?" it could have been a simple answer. That's not what he said. But she elaborates, and she says to the serpent, "Of the fruit of the trees of the garden we may eat, but of the fruit of the tree which is in the midst of the garden, God has said, you shall not eat of it." Now, she's okay right there. Now, some of you know this, but this is important to establish in this class. Had she stopped there, she would have been accurate. But she continues, "Neither shall you touch it, lest you die." Now, in this particular response that she gives to the serpent, what she does is she's added to the commandment. And when she adds to the commandment, she sets herself up for bad. Now, later in the biblical literature, there is a prohibition that's spelled out specifically to deal with this thing about adding to God's words. Look with me. Let's look at a couple of those passages. If you go to Deuteronomy chapter 4, and I just want to pick up, I'm going to pick up verse 1 and 2, Deuteronomy 4. "And now, Israel, listen to the statutes and unto the ordinances which I teach you to do them, that you may live, and go in and possess the land which Jehovah, the God of your fathers, gives you. You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish from it, that you may guard the commandments of Jehovah your God, which I command you." Now, I've taught on this many times. Your translation may say keep. "You shall not add unto the word which I command you, neither shall you diminish from it, that you may keep the commandments." But the Hebrew there is, the root word is to guard. So a person, in order to guard the commandments, if you think about it, you're guarding the commandments. You're not allowing anything to be added to, so you won't let someone add to it, and you won't let someone take from it. So to guard the commandments means that it remains as it was given. No addition and no subtraction. That's what guarding is. And so this particular command that shows up in Deuteronomy chapter 4 is a caution about what happens when the guarding is let down. Now look with me to Deuteronomy chapter 13. Deuteronomy chapter 13. In fact, in English, it's going to be chapter 12, verse 32. In the Hebrew, it's going to be Deuteronomy chapter 13, verse 1. It says, "What things soever I command you, that you shall observe. You shall observe to do, you shall not add thereto, nor diminish therefrom." So again, Deuteronomy is the only book in the Torah which has this prohibition of adding to or subtracting from, and it's mentioned twice, Deuteronomy 4 and Deuteronomy 13. Now go with me, let's get one more of these in your notes. If you go with me to the book of Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 30, Proverbs 30 and verse 6. Add thou not unto his words, lest he reprove thee, and you be found a liar. So the idea in these three passages, and there are more, but these three passages in particular, talk about how you're not to add to and you're not to take away from the commands, the word of God, because ultimately you'll be found to be a liar. Think about it. If you say that God said something that God did not say, that's not true. And what happens in the story in Gan Eden, in the Garden of Eden, is that Chava, Eve, tells the serpent, when he asks, "Has God said you can't eat from every tree?" she adds to God's words, and ultimately this leads to big trouble, as we know. Now, the garden story describes the infraction further. If you'll go back to Genesis, chapter 3, and I want to pick up in verse 6 again. I want to read verse 6 again. And when the woman saw that the tree was good for food, and that it was a delight to the eyes, and that the tree was to be desired to make one wise, she took of the fruit thereof and did eat. She gave also unto her husband with her, and he did eat. And the eyes of both of them were open, and they knew that they were naked, and they sewed fig leaves together and made themselves aprons. Now, this particular part of the story describes in pretty good detail temptation, if you will. Because what is being described is a lustful look. She looks at this forbidden thing, a fruit in this particular case, and she's drawn to it. She desires it. The word for desire is the same word that implies lust. She desires it so much that she cannot refrain herself, and she takes of the forbidden fruit and she eats it. Now, it's interesting to me that many of us often think about, you know, we all have been tempted by food. And this story is very much a picture of that. You know, you think about it. Sometimes it's difficult to push away from something which we shouldn't eat. And so this temptation is described in such a way. So think about that next time. Maybe it'll help you say no if you think about this story. But as you read the story, one of the things that I want you to understand is that her husband is there with her. Now, this part of the class, I want to drill down on this because I think a lot of times people have put all the blame on the woman. And given all the weight of that to her, you know, through her sin came into the world. And I don't want to let Mr. Adam off because he actually, according to the text, is right there. And he's the one that's charged. You'll see. Stick with me. I noticed this very clearly last night when I was reading. So if you go down to verse 8, let's keep reading. And they heard the voice of Jehovah God walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and the man and his woman hid themselves and from the presence of Jehovah God amongst the tree of the garden. And Jehovah God called out unto the man and said to him, "Where are you?" And he said, "I heard your voice in the garden, and I was afraid because I was naked, and I hid myself." And he said, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten of the tree whereof I commanded you," masculine singular, "that you should not eat?" And the man said, "The woman whom thou gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree, and I did eat." And Jehovah God said unto the woman, "What is this that you've done?" And the woman said, "The serpent beguiled me, and I did eat." Now, a couple of points that I want to make, and we'll look at these closer in just a few moments, but notice that when he says, "I heard your voice in the garden and hid myself," he says, "Because I was naked," God says, "How do you know? How'd you know this?" And he said, "Have you eaten from the tree which I commanded you not to eat from?" So the idea is that he realizes that man has violated the command. Now look, go down to verse 17. "And unto Adam," he says, "because you hearkened unto the voice of your wife and have eaten of the tree of which I commanded you, saying, 'You shall not eat of it,' cursed is the ground for your sake. In toil shall you eat of it all the days of your life. Thorns also and thistles shall it bring forth to you, and you shall eat the herb of the field. In the sweat of your face you shall eat bread till you return unto the ground, for out of it you were taken, for dust you are, and to dust you shall return." Now, the command and the directive here is communicated in the masculine singular. There is a way that God could have said you plural, meaning I commanded you both. But what he stresses throughout to Adam is that because you did this, masculine singular. Look this up in Hebrew. It's very clear. Now, the idea that I want to convey, if you recall the way that the story, the way that the narrative plays out, the command was given to Adam before the tardema, before the deep sleep, before he places Adam into a deep sleep and pulls out a side and fashions that into a woman. So the point being is that when God gave this command, Eve is not at his side. She's in his side. She's part of him. So you could say, well, she should have known because they were totally one. But I had a question of myself as I read this. When Adam woke up and he says, this one, this time, is bone of my bone and flesh of my flesh, and God presents the Isha to the Ish, when he presents the woman to the man, at this point or sometime shortly thereafter, should Adam, have taken the time to teach this woman the rules of the garden? And did he fail in that and not communicate the teaching of the garden? Because she does know this idea, because she says, we shall not eat from it, neither shall we touch it. But I think one of the thoughts that hit me as I build this course study is that the women have been given the bad rap long enough on this. The first sin belonging solely to Eve, I think that's gone on too long. Adam had every opportunity. He's right there with her. Read the text. It says, and she ate of it and gave unto her husband who was with her, and he did eat. Now, he should have or could have at any point said, you know, honey, we shouldn't eat that. But he didn't. He didn't correct her. He didn't stop her. And he failed to obey the command that was given to him. Now, some of you out there are saying, some of the women are saying, well, my husband wouldn't tell me what not to put in my mouth either. And some of the men are saying, there's no way I'm going to get between my wife and something she wants to eat. But you get the point. In other words, he made no effort whatsoever, according to the narrative, to shut this down. And he's guilty, as it were, with her. And because of this, they were chased out of Gan Eden. They were chased out of the Garden of Eden. So according to the Bible, if we look at these early stories in Genesis, we learn a couple of things about biblical diet. We know, based on the flow, the chronology of the text, and the way that the narrative flows, that in the beginning, humans didn't eat flesh, at least as far as the narrative goes. The original diet was that they would eat from the fruit of the trees, excluding one tree, but otherwise they could eat of the herbs and the fruit and so forth. That was the original diet. And in fact, there is no mention of the consumption of flesh, as it were, until the days of Noah, which is generations later. So go with me to Genesis 9. We're going to take a quick stroll through biblical diet. Genesis chapter 9. And it says in Genesis 9, beginning in verse 1, and God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. And the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, with all wherewith the ground teemeth, and all the fish of the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. As the green herb have I given you all. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, shall you not eat. And surely your blood, the blood of your lives, will I require it. The hand of every beast will I require it. and at the hand of man, even at the hand of every man's brother, will I require the life of man. Whosoever sheds man's blood, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God made he man. And you be fruitful and multiply, and bring forth abundantly in the earth, and multiply therein. So this particular narrative says that after the flood, that God tells Noah and his sons that once he gives them the charge to be fruitful and multiply, he says that he's given them meat to eat now, flesh. These living creatures that were placed in your care that you were to have dominion over as humans, you now have the permission to eat from the flesh thereof. Now, if you notice, there a lot of people have questions about this because it says all have been given into your hands. So some people suggest that this says that as far as Noah and his sons are concerned, that they can eat the flesh of any animal, that there's no designation as to what is forbidden and what's not forbidden. And the people in southern Louisiana certainly take it that way. And many people who are listening to me today might be able to say that in your area of the woods, people also believe that. You know, the people here in southern Louisiana eat all sorts of crawfish and catfish and, you know, all those things that are on the do not eat list in the Bible. But the idea is that there does seem to be, according to Genesis chapter 7, in fact, go with me back up to Genesis chapter 7, and let's just read, verse 2. Of every clean beast you shall take to you seven and seven, the male and female, and the beasts that are not clean, two, the male and his female, and so forth. So the idea is that there does seem to be an understanding of what is clean and unclean. So, but I will say this, according to the rabbis, according to the sages, for what it's worth, there is no prohibition in their understanding for non-Jews to eat from any kind of food, any kind of flesh. But we do know that there were designations here, and I'm going to suggest to you that there are degrees of ideal and the consumption of unclean animals that are called unclean is not good. I don't care what ethnicity, what race, creed. I don't care any of that. None of that matters. Some things are not good for you because they're on God's don't eat list. So we're going to continue. The Torah has much to say about diet. And there are two main sections of Torah legislation that contain what to eat and what not to eat in terms of flesh. And those two texts, those two chapters are Leviticus chapter 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14. In Leviticus chapter 11, we have 47 verses that are about diet. In one way or another, they're telling us things that we need to know about what goes into a man, what should and shouldn't go into a person. And then Deuteronomy 14 contains 21 verses about diet. And some is repetitive, but then there are things that we learn in one that we don't learn in the other. Now, we're not going to go through every detail and read the entire chapters, both Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14. But I will tell you that it is something that you should read, in particular Leviticus 11 today, because that's part of the Torah portion today is Leviticus chapter 11. Leviticus 11 begins, if you look with me, let's go there, Leviticus chapter 11. It begins with the following. And Jehovah spake unto Moses and to Aaron, saying unto them, speak unto the children of Israel, saying, these are the living thing things which you may eat among all the beasts that are on the earth. In other words, of those things which are living, here are the things which you can eat. And then following this particular statement, which notice very clearly, it's from Jehovah. Jehovah spoke unto Moses saying, and then he begins to describe what it is that the children of Israel can eat. Now, some of the command which follows is specific. It names certain living things, and some of which we don't know exactly what they are. The Hebrew is often translated, but they have question marks. We don't know what it's describing. But we do have certain guidelines to help us. In other words, there are some things that are given specifically they're spelled out. The pig is talked about and so forth. But some, we have to look at the criteria that are given in the Torah and look at the living thing and say, does this fit or does it not fit? So that we can determine whether or not something is placed into the clean category or into the unclean category. On the land, for instance, if we're dealing with a living thing that is on land, there are a few things that you have to know. They have to divide the hoof, and it has to be wholly cloven-footed, and they have to chew the cud. So there are some, in other words, these rules are meant so that you don't have to guess. So for instance, if you look at a camel, someone might say, well, it's got a divided hoof. It does. But if you look at the second part of it, it has to be wholly cloven-footed, whereas a camel's foot has a piece that goes across that prevents it from being wholly cloven, so it doesn't fit. So in other words, you have to be able to look at the description in all of its details. Another, we'll go to the water. If we're talking about living things which are in the water, now I always tell people, full or part-time. In other words, whether it's a living thing which is in the water all the time, or it's an amphibious, something that can go in and come out, we have to be able to look at that. So here's how you know. If it's something that spends time in the water, part-time or all-time, they have to have, to make the to eat list, they have to have fins and scales. Fins and scales. You can't have just fins and no scales and eat. See, you see what I'm saying? So an example would be a catfish. A catfish has fins, but it doesn't have scales. So a person knows that they can't eat catfish because it doesn't have fins and scales. And you can just go down the list. Here's some other good southern Louisiana foods that are forbidden. Oysters, crawfish, shrimp, lobster. Think there are a lot of these things which are so prevalent in the diet today that are on the forbidden list. Now look, here's the other thing, and I should have started with this. I realize that diet is one of the most sensitive things around. In other words, there are things that you can't talk about in polite company. You can't talk, for God's sake, don't talk politics right now. First of all, you'd be surprised how many of us really just don't care your views. But, sorry to be ugly, but don't talk politics. You can't mix religion and politics, and don't talk about diet, because diet, people often tell me, well, I eat whatever I want, to which I say, you're absolutely right, eat whatever you want. It doesn't, to me, I'm just saying this is what the Bible says. We have other people who are vegan, we have people who are vegetarian, we have people who are on the Atkins diet, and all they eat is meat. So people are very opinionated when it comes to their diet. So now that I'm halfway into my class, let me stress, what I'm describing is what is permissible, right? So in other words, the Bible says that some flesh is permissible. Now, if someone says, well, I don't eat any, that's great, because you can say, well, my biblical diet is that Garden of Eden diet. But someone else can eat the living thing as long as they follow certain guidelines according to Scripture. Okay? So again, own land. Here are the criteria. Has to be divided hoof, wholly cloven, and chew the cud. Those three. You have to put a check mark. Yep. And then if we're talking about water, creatures, living things in the water, they have to have fins and scales. Alligator meat is out. All right. Now, when you get to the Bible's description of fowl, you know, birds, and winged swarming things, I guess some of you might want to eat insects and such. There are specific ones that are mentioned. In other words, it's not as easy to determine based upon criteria, but it does describe the legs which bend and so forth, so you have to look. So in a broad way, in a very broad way, these dietary laws fall under a category of purity laws, okay? Where you're determining between clean and unclean. Look with me. Let's go to Leviticus 10. By the way, this is the job of the priest, is to help us determine between clean and unclean. Look at verse 10, Leviticus 10:10, that ye may make a distinction between the holy and the common, and between the unclean and the clean, and that ye may teach the children of Israel all the statutes which Jehovah has spoken unto them by Moses. So the idea is that the priest have a very specific job. They are teachers. They are to teach the people to know the difference between clean and unclean, pure and impure. And if you read Malachi, the opening chapters of Malachi, what you get is that the priest, the lips of the priest are supposed to have knowledge, and people go to them for information. So now, when it comes to teaching people the difference between clean and unclean, again, Leviticus 11, Deuteronomy 14 contain these lists. They have specific creatures or living things which are named, and then some you are forced to look more at the criteria that are given, you know, whether it's got fins and scales, so forth. Now, there are some which it says they can't even be touched, let alone eaten. You're not supposed to touch the carcass of certain things. Now, there's something that interested me as I read through and I prepared my notes last night. I thought about, back to Eve's point, in the garden, when Eve adds, you can't even touch it, I'd never really thought about this, but what I did as I was preparing my class for today, last night, I wrote down some of the main texts that I wanted to cover, and I wrote Eve in her situation. I had that in a column, and on the other column, I was writing down notes about how to distinguish what was clean and unclean and what were the dietary rules. And it just so happened that when I wrote down those which can't be touched, it was across from Eve, and I had never really associated these two thoughts. There are dietary rules about some things which you're not even to touch. And so I thought, and this is sort of just an idea that I have, but let's be careful when we look at the dietary rules that are in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 in particular, let's be careful not to assign, you know, some of these you're not supposed to eat. Let's be careful not to say, well, you can't even touch that one, because a person could if they wanted to. You see what I'm saying? So just think about that. Just kind of a fleeting thought that hit me. Now, Deuteronomy chapter 14. Deuteronomy 14 begins to present the diet by reminding the people that they are children of Jehovah, holy people, and a segula. So in Deuteronomy chapter 14, it begins, you, plural, are children of Jehovah. Now, literally in Hebrew, it doesn't say of, it says to or for. So it's like you're children for Jehovah. You're supposed to be doing things according to your Father in heaven's plan. And then it says that they are to be a holy people. Now, this is essential when we talk about the Bible, because one of the things that comes out very early on when God calls Israel out of Egypt, and in Exodus chapter 19, when they're at Sinai, he tells them, you are to be a holy people, an Am Kodesh. This people is supposed to be holy, set apart. And when it talks about there to be a segula, a very special treasure, this people has to be different. They're to be a peculiar people with rules and statutes. And they are to live by these in such a way that ultimately the nations of the world look at them and say, what a wise and understanding people is this. So they are to model the way. Now, what I wanted to stress about the way that Deuteronomy 14 begins is that Deuteronomy 14, the reason for avoiding certain living things for food. Now, a lot of people have a lot of ideas here. I've heard people say, you probably have as well. Somebody told me one time, they said, you know why they couldn't eat pork in biblical times? And I said, because God said, don't eat pork. And they said, no. The reason they couldn't eat pork is because they couldn't cook it well enough to get the parasites out of it. Now, look, since caveman days, fire has always been hot. So I don't buy that theory. I think that it could always be cooked well enough, and people have all sorts of ideas. And then they have ideas about why should people follow these things. And some will say, well, you have health reasons and so forth. You know, certain kinds of food, we know that certain kinds of living things cause disease and so forth. Well, all of that may be true, but it's a side point. The reason for avoiding certain food is because it's commanded. That's the reason. It's commanded. Now, there are benefits or there are consequences for eating or not eating what it is that is commanded. But the point being is that the reason that we follow this is because we're following the command of our Creator and the designer of the human body. Now, holiness is the goal. In other words, a holy, set-apart people should follow a holy and set-apart diet. Now, there are certain things which are described as being good to eat and certain things which are described as forbidden. What I'm trying to encourage people to do, lest I be like Adam and not caution people, like he didn't tell Eve, don't do that. I want to tell you, don't eat those things which are considered forbidden. If someone wants to take it further and say, I'm going to work my way back to Eden, well and good. Please do so. I think the further we can get, the closer we can get to that Eden diet, the better off we are, because ultimately everyone's going to be there, at least in my opinion, which I'll get to in a few minutes. But there are people who follow other peculiar dietary things in the Bible. Remember, if you think about this, the Nazir. A Nazir is a certain set-apart diet for it could be a designated period, or like Samson, it could be for one's entire life. But it's generally associated with a period, a vow, in which a person does not cut their hair or trim their beard or anything like that. No haircut whatsoever. And they avoid anything which is associated with the grape. no seed, no oil, no wine, no vinegar. You know, this is a Nazir. It's not required. It's not something you have to do, but it is for a period of dedication, what I call a hyper-holiness phase. And I don't mean to bring that discredit. What I'm saying is if someone wants to totally dedicate them for a certain themselves to a certain task for a certain period, they can, but it's not required. So what I'm trying to show people is that there are some things which are required. Let's start there. Like, let's none of us consume blood. You know, if a person says, well, you know, I'm going to eat whatever I want, then I might tell them, well, if you are, at least don't eat the blood. Right? Okay. Look with me at Leviticus chapter 11. Leviticus chapter 11. And I want to read verse 42. Whatsoever goes upon the belly, and whatsoever goes upon all fours, or whatsoever has feet, even all creeping things that creep upon the earth, them you shall not eat, for they are an abomination. And you shall not make yourself abominable with any creeping thing that creepeth, neither shall you make yourselves unclean with them, that you should be defiled thereby. For I am Jehovah your God. Sanctify yourself, therefore, and be ye holy. For I am holy. Neither shall you defile yourself with any manner of creeping thing that moves upon the earth. For I am Jehovah that brought you out of the land of Egypt to be your God. You shall therefore be holy, for I am holy. This is the law of the beast and of the bird and of every living creature that moves in the waters and of every creature that creeps upon the earth, to make a distinction between the unclean and the clean, and between the living thing that may be eaten and the living thing that may not be eaten. You understand that this wraps up the dietary rulings that are conveyed in Leviticus 11. It's saying that everything is for the purpose of showing you what is clean and unclean. Now, I want you to notice that in this particular passage, it gives this idea that a person can become unclean, defiled, and abominable by what they take in. Now, this is why I think it's so important. I think that people have this idea where they separate the physical and the spiritual, and I think that they're connected. I think that we are a composite of these things, and that the physical can affect what people call the spiritual. And so here we have this idea that defilement can come as a result of taking certain foods into your body. Now, by the way, I wanted to touch on this. I'm primarily a textual person, but I do think it's neat. I think it's interesting that the rabbis pointed out a couple of things, and I wanted to bring them to light because they have to do with this Torah reading. So a scribe in Hebrew is called a sofer, a person who counts. A sofer is one who counts. They counted the letters, they counted the words, they counted the lines, because they want to ensure that they're accurately transmitting the text from generation to generation. And this went to the extreme. According to the Masoretic notes, the Hebrew notes within the text of the Hebrew Bible, in the Torah, you'll see small Hebrew letters writing, and there is one such note, a rabbinic note, in this particular Torah reading, and it says that tradition, now this is tradition, that, well, let me back up for a second. They determined what was the center verse of the whole Torah, what was the center word of the whole Torah, and what was the center letter of the whole Torah by counting, all right? According to tradition, this is what it is. So in Leviticus 11:42, which we just read, whatsoever goes upon the belly. In Hebrew, the word belly is gachon. And gachon the letter Vav. In Gachon, there's a footnote in the Hebrew Masoretic text. The scribes said, this is the center letter. The idea is that the way to a man's heart is through his belly. The very heart of the Torah is the Vav in belly. Now, is this, some of you like this kind of stuff? Some of you say, I don't know, it's kind of mumbo-jumbo stuff. But it's interesting that this would be the very center point. We are at the center of the Hebrew Bible, the Vav in Gachon, in belly. By the way, the verse that has the center word is in Leviticus chapter 10, verse 16. Years ago, when I was learning Hebrew, Johnny Powell, my Hebrew teacher, was teaching me, and he told me this. He said, he asked me, as I recall, he said, the Torah is perfect. Would there be, if it's perfect, would there be one word or two words in the middle? In other words, if you found the center of the Torah, what would it be, one word or two words? And I said, I don't know. He said, be one word. Right? That's the center. And then you have an equal number on either side. But what he showed me was, is that it's actually two words side by side, but it's a repetition of the same word. Look with me, Leviticus chapter 10, Leviticus chapter 10, verse 16. Leviticus 10, 16 says, and Moses diligently sought the goat of the sin offering. In the Hebrew, it says, derosh, derash. Moses sought. Yes, sought. It's the way you do superlative in Hebrew at times is you say the word twice. So, derosh, derash. So, the center of the Torah in terms of number of words is searching. So, his lesson to me that night was that the heart of the Torah is about the search. And so I always thought that that was interesting. Okay, just for your notes, I'm not going to go into this because I have a little more to cover. But in your notes, if you want to know the center verse of all the Torah, if you counted all the verses up, the center verse is Leviticus chapter 8:8. And it talks about light and perfection. Make your own rabbinic story up about that, if you will. So the question that I have, according to Leviticus and Deuteronomy, one can be defiled by what goes in. This is important. And I want to stress that. Go with me to the book of Ezekiel. Ezekiel chapter 4. And I want to pick up verse 9. Ezekiel chapter 4, beginning in verse 9. Take thou also unto thee wheat and barley and beans and lentils and millet and spelt and put them in one vessel and make thee bread thereof according to the number of the days that you shall lie upon your side, even 390 days you shall eat thereof. In other words, Ezekiel is told he's going to be going to act out in the eyes of the people certain things which will cause them to ask questions. And so he's going to be on one side for a number of days and then be on another side. Now, he's got to make bread. Notice how the bread, this is, you've heard of Ezekiel bread. People buy Ezekiel bread from the grocery store. And every time I see a bread loaf that says Ezekiel bread, I laugh inside because I think they have no idea about the story of Ezekiel bread. So I want you now that you listen to this story, if you didn't know this before, when someone says they eat Ezekiel bread, you can laugh with me. Verse 10, Ezekiel 4, verse 10, and thy food which you shall eat shall be by weight, 20 shekels a day. From time to time you shall eat it, and you shall drink water by measure, the sixth part of a hin. From time to time you shall drink. And you shall eat it as barley cakes, and you shall bake it in their sight with dung that comes out of man. So Ezekiel bread, God gives him the recipe. Need you to take some wheat and barley and beans and lentils and millet and spelt and mix it all up and then cook it over basically in your pot. But the fuel that you're going to use is human dung. So that's Ezekiel bread. Think about that when you look at it on the shelf. All right. Now, what happens is, verse 13. And Jehovah said, even thus shall the children of Israel eat their bread unclean among the nations, whether I will drive them. Now listen to what Ezekiel says. Then I said, ah, Lord Jehovah, behold, my soul has not been polluted, for from my youth, even up until now, have I not eaten of that which defiles or dies of itself or is torn by beast, neither came their abominable flesh into my mouth. So what Ezekiel's response to God is that I've never had anything unclean. I've not been made abominable. I don't want to do this. See, he's quoting back to God the rule about not defiling himself. And so watch the response in verse 15. Then he said to me, see, I have given thee cow dung for man's dung, and you shall prepare your bread thereon. So the idea was he didn't want to be defiled, and it was really just something horrible that he would have to do in the eyes of the people. And so God ultimately says, okay, you don't have to cook your bread on fuel of human dung. You can use cow dung, which to my thought, you know, I know that's probably what they use for fuel, but it might be the dung part that you don't want around your bread. But anyway, the idea is that certain things bring defilement. Now look with me at Isaiah 65. Go with me to Isaiah 65. And I want to read beginning in verse 1. Isaiah 65 and verse 1. I am inquired of by them that ask not for me. I am found of them that sought me not. I said, behold me unto a nation that was not called by my name. Now, who's he talking about? Is he talking about the children of Israel? Who is this nation that Jehovah is saying, behold me, unto a nation that was not called by my name? I have spread out my hands all the day unto a rebellious people that walk in a way that is not good after their own thoughts, a people that provoke me to my face continually, sacrificing in gardens, burning incense upon bricks, that sit among the graves and lodge in the secret places, that eat swine's flesh, and the broth of abominable things is in their vessels, that say, stand by thyself, come not near to me, for I am holier than thou. These are a smoke in my nose, a fire that burns all the day. Behold, it is written, before me I will not keep silence, but will recompense, yeah, will recompense into their bosom. Your own iniquities and the iniquities of your fathers together, saith Jehovah, that have burned incense upon the mountains and blasphemed me upon the hills, therefore will I first measure their work into their bosom. So this particular description is about people, among other things, who are consuming unclean things. And it sounds like things don't go well. Look with me down to chapter 66, chapter 66 of Isaiah. And I want you to look at verse 15, 66, verse 15. For behold, Jehovah will come with fire, and his chariots shall be like the whirlwind, to render his anger with fierceness and his rebuke with flames of fire. For by fire will Jehovah execute judgment, and by his sword upon all flesh, and the slain of Jehovah shall be many. They that sanctify themselves and purify themselves into the gardens behind one in the midst, eating swine's flesh and the abomination of the mouse, they shall come to an end together, saith Jehovah. Now, context is everything. And I encourage people to read the entire context around this. But I want you to notice that the recipient of the vengeance of God happens to be on those who are consuming that which is on the forbidden list. Now, some people might say, well, wait a minute. The dietary rules only apply to the people of Israel. And some who listen to me might say, I'm not Jewish. I don't have to go. I'm not Israelite. I don't have to. Look, diet from the very beginning was applicable for all humanity. Good, healthy diet was always part of what God did before there ever was an Israel, way back in the Garden of Eden. And I think that ultimately that's where things will go back to. Look with me at Isaiah 65, verse 25. The wolf and the lamb shall feed together. The lion shall eat straw like the ox, and dust shall be the serpent's food. They shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains, saith Jehovah. So this is looking far into the future when even lions are eating straw. They're not chasing down their prey anymore. This idea is looking towards that glorious future when things are back in harmony and balance like it was in the garden. Look with me to Isaiah 11, Isaiah 11 and 9. And it says, they shall not hurt nor destroy in all my holy mountains, same as Isaiah 65, 25. But get this, for the earth shall be full of the knowledge of Jehovah as the waters cover the sea. So the idea is that the entire earth will be made known about this Edenic state. And it's going to be a restoration to the original. That's the goal. That's what ultimately is talked about here, that the earth will be covered with the knowledge of God as waters cover the sea. Now, it's likely that one day the world will return in total to this original diet. Diet's always been a part of the Creator's plan for humanity. Always and for everyone, there have been prohibitions. You know, certain things which are on the don't eat list. So, for instance, blood is universal. So there should never be anyone who can find a way to justify taking blood into their body. It's just not allowed by anyone. And, you know, if you're a B'nai Noah person who follows the rabbinic designation for non-Jews, and I know some don't, but some of you listening could very well fall into that category, you know that the rabbis make it a point that blood and what is designated as the limb of a living creature, you know, these are dietary designations. It deals with what you are not supposed to do in terms of your diet. So everyone has some part of this holiness diet that they can grab hold of. I encourage people to not, if you are, I encourage people not to consume that which is on the forbidden list. And one of the main reasons is, the main reason, is that God says it's not allowed. Now, the additional reason that I'll add is that I believe that pandemics and disease are the result of violating God's holiness diet. And you might say, well, it happened because of a lab. Well, they're still tinkering with things on that unclean list. And I'm not saying it's God's punishment. Don't get me wrong. Some people are saying that. That's not what I'm saying. But I'm saying that whenever people go against what it is that's commanded, they open themselves up for the consequences which follow. Now, that's the way I understand it. When we eat that which is forbidden, we introduce the potential for sickness and death. And the bad thing is, for instance, with this pandemic and so forth, is that innocent people are affected too. It's not that they did something wrong necessarily. It's just that once things, it's like once the lid comes off, you can't get it back in. As Jehovah said in the beginning, on the day that you eat thereof, dying, you will surely die. So there seems to be an association with violating the dietary rules that God has in place. There seems to be an association with that infraction and the bringing of death. So why chance it? Why chance it? And as I have said for many years, why listen to serpents? See, the serpent is the one who says, does God really says that you shouldn't eat certain things? When someone says that, and whoever it is, and you look past the person that you're speaking to, understand that it's that same voice. If you listen closely, there's a small hiss behind the voice because it's asking the same question the serpent asked. We should quit listening to serpents. And the response, hath God said? The response to that question is very simple. Don't add to, don't take away from. When someone asks you about this, the answer is yes. God has said that there's some things which we can't eat. So study the diet in Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy chapter 14. May you be healthy. May you continue to be healthy and all of those that you love. Many blessings to you. Shabbat shalom. Until next time, Shabbat shalom.